Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 78. Wow, I still remember my intro. Awesome. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. What's up, internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 78. Being recorded on April the 14th, 2018, brought to you by RayRay.net. Of course, you guys know who I am. My name is RayRay. Nice to meet you. So, I know it was kind of sudden for me to come back to podcasting yesterday. Shout out to Snotty Drippin' and Ty Windish for that fantastic NBA playoff preview that we recorded on April the 13th. But, why the hiatus? Why the break? It's not the easiest thing for me to explain right now. Maybe ever, really. And I'm sure you've seen me around the internet, but in the podcast world, I was not around. I took a year off. Believe me, that was not my intention. Some of you guys already know where I went and what happened to me. I made it pretty public. Explaining it by spoken word, though, never easy for me. So, to you guys that don't know or that need a reminder of where I've been, here's what happened. Again, before that recording of Snotty Drippin' and Ty Windish, my last podcast was recorded on March 22nd, 2017. Yeah, that's 13 months, basically. Shout out to Whitney Medworth. She was my last guest, but why did I stop all of a sudden? I still had 3 months of NBA season to go, and I stopped. Simply put, I was burnt out, and I just needed to get away, and I did. I put all my energy into writing, but even that burned me out, so I figured I'd take a break during the summer, probably start doing podcasts again around July or August, and, you know, just enjoy life and not worry about content. I kept putting it off because, you know, I was enjoying life a little bit, you know? Not being obligated to put out content and, you know, just being free for a little bit. And while I was putting it off, I was also having doubts. Is there still room for someone like me who feels a little too old for the podcast game? I've been doing this since 2009, and around that time, my anxiety and my stress levels were getting higher. And so I kept putting it off. September came, and that's when I had a car accident. And it's not the biggest car accident there is, but it was enough to shake me up. My health wasn't great before the accident. After the accident, it became problematic. So here's what resulted from it. I was sent to the ER due to hypertension late September, and when I took an EKG heart test on October the 5th, I had suffered a heart attack shortly before that. It was probably during my trip to the ER. But yeah, I couldn't believe it. Like, I had a heart attack, and it was weird because I didn't feel anything, and I felt normal then. But I didn't feel so normal a few days after that because I noticed I was losing strength. And I was getting tired, fatigued quicker. And it was not fun. Just walking around made me tired. I just didn't feel so normal. I had shortness of breath sometimes. So that's why this supposed short break became longer. Because I had health issues. And it was not fun thinking that I was going to keel over at any point. You know, I was so nervous. I was so anxious every day. I started to stay away from anything that would make me tense up, whether it's driving. Oh, driving sucks so bad, and it still sucks today. I stay away from the freeways. The news, obviously, you know what's going on there. This country is not exactly in great shape either. Social media, like, Twitter is getting louder. There's more fights, more debates. So I stayed away from all of that because I just didn't want my stress levels to go up. I saw a cardiologist for the rest of the year while I was going to physical therapy at the same time. So I had that going on, and I was finally cleared on December the 29th. And as soon as I got cleared, I started going to the gym. I've lost 15 pounds since then, so I still need to lose about 15, 20 more, but that's where I am. So the gym has become sort of like my zen, my obsession, but I feel at home at the gym, and I can't believe that I've never felt at home with the gym until recently. You know, I'm almost 40 years old, and I've probably spent like a total of like a year and a half in a gym in my life, when I know I could have been doing this my entire adult life, right? So, but yeah, I love the gym now. I like working out. It's cool. So once I started going to the gym, I thought maybe I could start doing some podcasting again, and I felt mentally okay enough to do it, but I kept putting it off because I thought about what could be the ramifications. What if I get stressed too easily? What if I take on too much that, you know, I might get stressed out again and stuff like that. So I kept putting it off until finally this week. It's like, okay, I should just go ahead and dive in and do it. And I did. And I'm very happy to be doing it again. And once again, shout out to Snotty Drippin' and Ty Windish. I barely met Ty yesterday. Like, I didn't know him, so he's hearing this for the first time too. But yeah, so I'm happy to be doing it again. I miss podcasting so much. I miss talking hoops. I miss talking video games. I miss talking to people, period. It's what I like to do. And not only do I want to provide an outlet for entertainment for people, but I do it because I love it. I just love talking to people. I think it's fun. Well, editing a podcast is not fun, but I do get a kick out of creating my own podcast episode, right? So, I like knowing what makes people tick and what people like. I just like the entire process. And I'm just glad to be back in the podcast world. So, I'm healthy physically and mentally as of now, and I hope you guys are too. But yeah, that's where I've been the last year, to those that don't know. And I want to thank everyone who checked in with me. And everyone who encouraged me. It'll take forever if I name every one of you guys, but you people know who you are. Thank you so much, and I'm forever grateful. So yeah, got that out of the way. So let's get on back to your regularly scheduled podcast. Promo coming up. After that, my NBA season award talk with Oliver Maroney of Dime. Take it away. Thank you for listening. But before we get to Oliver Maroney, let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Also find this podcast on Stitcher. And of course, the original website, rayray.net/fun. That's ray-ray.net/fun. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass. And follow the podcast Twitter at rayrayisfun. You cannot fit rayrayisfundamental on the Twitter handle because they only allow 16 characters. So yeah, that's about it. Just a reminder. Now let's go to the interview with Oliver Maroney. Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 78. Joining me on this Sunday night, being recorded April 15, 2018. From Dime Magazine, and he records the Big 3 Podcast. Oliver Maroney, how's it going, man?
It's going great. It's going great. Oh my gosh, it's been such a... it's really fun to watch playoffs in comparison to playoffs. Mm-hmm. So happy that it's here. It's been really fun to watch. Like, all the games just was one of the only higher games. So, most part, though, it's been pretty remarkable in just the way that players are starting to develop and grow and become superstars in front of our eyes. And then, obviously, you see there's been a really wonderful kind of mix of youth and experience and coaching and just kickoff weekend.
We'll playoffs more in a little bit, but right now I want podcast to go. That's a pretty big deal.
It's been fun, man. It's been a lot of fun. It's such a unique, you know, proposition to put into play, especially in a professional setting, and really great to be around. I mean, it's really surreal just to be around some of these people. I mean, Ice Cube, talk with him and being able to talk with AI and just, like, all the different guys that are excitement back in my life about specifically basketball, just because I think for the past 3 years, it's been the same teams in the final. It's been the same sort of storylines. Hmm. A lot of just enthusiasm back into basketball for.
At least it kind of fills in the gap between the off seasons, right? And then there's kind of like nothing for the next 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. It feels redundant. I mean, the 2 games. This is 10 games, so like every game is so much more meaningful. And it's like a playoff game. It's like a playoff mm-hmm. atmosphere. That it's done. They go from city to city, place to place. It's great. It's going to grow exponentially. Mm-hmm. You talk to people within Ice Cube. They just all say that when Ice Cube does something and he's passionate about it, it happens. Honestly, I just think there's something special about him and unique that has brought all these guys in, and I think that goes a long way for this.
Mm-hmm. Things like Kobe, Kevin Garnett, Rasheed Wallace in the Big 3, you think, at some point?
I think so. I heard the rumblings about Rasheed Wallace early this offseason, and mm-hmm. I thought be in it. Sobriety hadn't taken them up on the opportunity, but I have a feeling we're going to see more and more guys join this league over time. I think it's about, you know, getting, because on TV, as great as the TV broadcast is, you know, they've got Michael Rapaport, who's just, he's great. I think he's phenomenal at what he does, but mm-hmm. They've got guys like that who are very unique. You know, I'm Gus Johnson, just excellent play-by-play and color analysts and stuff. But as far as the actual games itself, it's really hard to really grasp on what it is if you're not actually there. And mm-hmm. I think being there is a really important part of the Big 3, and I think that's why it could sell. That's why it sold, I think it was 7 out of 10 arenas. So I think there's not only is there a lot of value there, but I think they've capitalized well in the summertime when there isn't any basketball going on and there is, you know, families looking to do things of that sort.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, do you think the NBA and the Big 3 will come together, work together at some point? Because, I mean, come on, these are former NBA players after all.
Yeah, I think it will. At some point, you have to assume that it's going to happen. I think the additions, coaching staff, you've got, you know, Clyde Drexler was a coach last year. Now they've got Nancy Lehman in his place. They've got, obviously, Dr. J, Charles Oakley, Gary Payton. These are, like, first ballot Hall of Fame. Yeah. You're just, like, it's honestly, like I said, it's surreal to be there and just to, like, see them coach and see them talk. And, you know, Gary Payton, nicest guy that you'll ever meet, but he'll trash talk you all the way. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter how – it's just the way he is. Mm-hmm. You know, the NBA, they need those guys to continue to bring that legacy and that brand along. And I think even nowadays, there's players out there that look up to these guys. I mean, if anything, there's still a generation of players that look up to Allen Iverson are playing right now. And I think this league – has some of that, and I think there's some really cool learning experiences that could take place with both of these leagues. And I think, like I said, it'd be only beneficial if the NBA could try and bring him along.
Mm. Sidebar, I have met Gary Payton myself. He's a really, really good guy. And in another note, his sister sang for my cousin's wedding, so there's a
crazy
trivia right there. Yeah,
there you go. No, yeah. Great dude. I mean, he's one of a kind. Like, super nice. You would never anticipate. Like, I remember being in Seattle with him. Like, lines out the door at the hotel that we're staying at. And he'd talk to him. He'd, you know, just have playful, fun banter around whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it's just unique about the Big 3 that I haven't experienced elsewhere. The NBA guys are just, they're so pent up. They've got so much stuff going on. They're just, you know, I'm not going to say that their personalities aren't like these guys, but these guys, these guys are doing it for the love of the game. They're not doing it for a paycheck. Like, you know, not to say that the Big 3 isn't, but, you know, they're doing it because they love basketball and they love being around the guys and they love just everything about it. And I think that's what's so unique about this is it is kind of like, I don't want to say it's like Sunday league basketball, men's league basketball, but it is in a sense similar to that just with, you know, Hall of Fame players.
Yeah, and it fills in their void, right? Because they're retired. What do they do now? I'm not saying they don't like basketball, but the love, it'll stay there forever. There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the unique part about the whole thing is it's 3-on-3 basketball.
Yeah.
I think people, That's what's so great about it, is that it is a little bit different from what they're used to. So they are learning a new game. And then on top of that, it's just less wear and tear on their bodies. That's why players can play in it. You know, obviously it's very competitive. Alan bowed out after a few weeks because I think he felt like he couldn't hang. And I think that's the honest truth. I'm not going to say that that is the case or isn't, but I think personally that just seeing what I saw, I think it's pretty evident that he may have been a step or two behind, and I think that's the reason he decided not to play anymore. But I think him still being there and being a part of it is huge, and I think that, like I said, just the aspect of 3-on-3 basketball, these guys still know how to play basketball better than most college or pros, to be completely honest. They know how to play the game. They just, you know, they've lost maybe a step. They've lost a little bit of athleticism, and so this just presents itself in a way that I think is very, very unique and different from other leagues, the NBA, other styles of basketball.
Switching gears, Oliver here is known for a few hot takes on NBA Twitter, just like a lot of people. But you know, we see you
all the time.
But we see you though. It's like, whoa, you're raising some eyebrows here. And what I have in my hand right now, on my phone, is your playoff predictions. Again, we're going to go over the playoffs really quick. But I do see you mentioning that you had the Pacers in six against Cleveland. That kind of raised a few eyebrows right there, because Cleveland, obviously, three-time defending East champs. So, you got proven right for game one.
Yeah, they got it for game one. And I like I said, Yeah, they read into this stuff way too much. Look, I looked at what the body of work was for Cleveland. I looked at the body of work of what the Pacers had done. I think the Pacers present multiple matchup problems in the regular season. It showed. Miles Turner wasn't playing in a lot of those games too. And then you add that into the account, along with, you know, just the experience that they do have. I mean, Thad Young's been there, done that. He knows how to play against these guys. And I think Victor Oladipo is ready for that next step. And in order to do that, he's going to have to try and win this thing. And I think for Cleveland side of things, it's not like a – and I think I said this today. It's not really like an indictment on how bad they've played or how poorly they've played. Of course, that does that's part of my prediction process. But I think it's also just how good the Pacers have played. I really think that if you match them up against basically anybody in the East aside from maybe – boy, Toronto, and maybe Philadelphia, depending on the situation, I think they can push a series to six or seven games, no doubt about it. I just think they're that good, and I think that they've got experience coaching. Nate McMillan's been to the playoffs multiple years, multiple times, understands what it takes. And I think what's really cool about this team is I wrote them off to begin the season. Like, it's not like I've been on this train all along. You know,
I think we kind of all wrote them off, right? Because the trade, but for
I thought they were tanking. I even told Kevin Pritchard that. me and him have gone back and forth a few times, and it's like after that trade, I remember being like, "Yeah, the Pacers are going rock bottom. They're going to be the worst team in the league." I think I actually said that on the radio at some point. I was totally wrong. I'm happy that I'm wrong, though. I mean, I think that it's really, really fun to watch this team and watch Victor Oladipo prove people wrong. And just, gosh, I think they deserve a lot more credit than what they've been given. And that's why, like I said, part of the prediction process for me is just my gut feeling and just how likable the team is. I think there's all that into it. I don't think, I should get scolded for having an opinion. obviously the opinion was hot, sure. But I think that they have a lot of really cool pieces that work well together. And I think they've got this effort, and we saw it in game one. They just are relentless. Like, they did not stop. And maybe that's a detriment to Cleveland, as much as it is like a positive for the Pacers. But I just think that they played, I mean, they led the entire way.
Right.
They did not get, and yes, Cleveland bounced back. They didn't shoot well. There's all these different things that go into it. But I think that Indiana presented a ton of problems on defense that, maybe LeBron and the Cavs just assumed wouldn't be there. And I'm not sure if they're going to be able to fix it or not, but I don't really trust Ty Lue either. So I have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to make big time adjustments and really change the outlook of this series. Now, obviously LeBron is LeBron, and if he can play at MVP level LeBron, anything is possible. They can probably win this thing in five games. But I think as it currently stands, like I said, if Indiana can retain, keep home court advantage, I think it's very, very possible that they win in six. And the way that LeBron, just his attitude and demeanor, I tweeted it during the game, I don't see why he would re-sign here. It doesn't look like he wants to be there. So I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens, but it's been really, really exciting and fun. And that game was, it was actually really, really interesting to me, just because you knew Cleveland was going to try and make a run at some point, and they kept making these small, like 8 to 10 point runs, but they couldn't get over that hump. And that was really, really intriguing all game.
To be fair, LeBron doesn't look like he wants to be there like the past few years. Like we saw this in 2016, right?
It's true.
And yeah, they end up winning the championship. Miraculously, yep. Right? So,
yep.
Another thing, I had James Hollis, Snotty Drippin, you know him, on my podcast last Friday night, as well as Ty Windish from Behind the Buck Pass, and we were talking about Cleveland. We were hesitant on picking Cleveland. We did pick them eventually, but we were hesitant because their defense is awful. Well, bottom two defensive rating. So we still pick Cleveland because, obviously, LeBron James. Like, it's hard to pick against LeBron James. It just is.
But, oh, yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. So, but Pacers did look good game one. We'll see the rest of the series. And your other predictions that kind of stood out to me, they're all in the East, actually. Milwaukee in six, which is not too hot of a take, because look at Boston, right? The ravage of injuries. And Miami in six. Philadelphia.
That seemed to be a really hot take. Although I didn't really understand that was that.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't really understand it. I think people who've been around basketball long enough know that the Miami Heat pose problems whether they have a great roster or not.
Yeah, I mean they're being coached very well. So
that's they're the coached very well. I think they've got experience. Dwayne Wade added to the roster, I think, makes a difference. I honestly thought that Ben Simmons would struggle a little bit more than he did. Just because in a playoff setting, I know Ben Simmons is an incredible player, no question at all. But he has shown semblances every once in a while, especially earlier on in the year without Joel Embiid, where he couldn't create offensively as much because defenses were closing him down, double teaming, throwing different guys at him and just making him frustrated. And so I think that, I thought Miami may be able to figure that out. And if Joel Embiid is indeed out game two, which it sounds like he is, there's still a pretty good possibility. I think Miami could win in six. It's just a matter of, how many games Joel Embiid is out. And I think I wish I would have prefaced it, but I said it on a podcast that I had done the day of the playoffs starting. Is basically, it's really up to when Joel Embiid plays, I think, is the difference in that series.
Yeah. So. With Philly, their confidence is sky high. They've won 17 straight dating back to the regular season and to now. So, like, it's kind of hard to stop that kind of momentum.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I after game one, I'm a little bit fearful that Miami won't be able to turn this thing around, but man, I've written off Miami way too many times, and I sometimes just go with my gut and what I've seen in the past, and I think that Miami could still make the adjustments, but I'm not, certainly not sold on game one. I don't think it's a very good
indicator
of what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. However, the three-point shooting, that's really the key, I think, for Philadelphia. If they can keep that up and Ben Simmons can continue to just unlock this, crazy offensive potential that this team has, they're unstoppable. I really think that Ben Simmons with four shooters is the scariest thing. And I think I had somebody mention it, or they direct messaged me or something. They're like, what if Klay Thompson joined this team? And I was just like, oh my gosh. Oh, wow. And then, you start thinking and it's like, oh my goodness. They have like 23 million in cap space this coming off season.
Yeah.
They've got two lottery potential picks, I think, or two first round picks. And this team is going to be scary for a very long time.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned Milwaukee in the six as well, but what a game that was. The best game of the playoffs so far, at least.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
They're actually showing the highlights right now on TNT, where Chris Middleton just made that 0.5 36 foot fling right there, right?
I don't even know. Like, that was so casual. I've never seen such a casual buzzer beater. He just, like, it just looked like it was, you know, a practice shot or something. Like, he would look like Steph Curry in warm-ups. Like, it was really strange. But yeah, super exciting game. I think it's going to be like that all series long. I chose Milwaukee just because of the talent. I think that currently, as constructed with the injuries and all the other things that right. have happened with Boston, mm-hmm. I just think talent makes out better than coaching or, you know, philosophies and all these other things that people want to throw out there. And I just think Giannis is the best player on the floor. And that's why I went with Milwaukee. More, like I said, another gut pick, just like, mm-hmm. okay, Chris Middleton could get hot. Giannis can go off. And I think in the playoffs, like, people were so depressed about Milwaukee because of how bad they had been and how bad they had played. But the playoffs are just so much different. Like, you can't take everything from the regular season and just transpose it over to the postseason. I just don't think that happens. Players have a different level of, you know, just their mentality, their kind of the way that they approach the game. And so I think that there's definitely something that Milwaukee can definitely win this thing still.
Mm-hmm. The hilarious thing, I mentioned James Hollis and Ty Windish, who, by the way, Boston and Milwaukee fans, respectively. But James Hollis picked Milwaukee, Boston yep. fan.
Shocker.
And Ty Windish picked Boston. Like, oh, they know their goodness. Own teams, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I guess. Hey, that's honest. That's brutally yeah. honest kind of stuff. I love when people do that. I think yeah. That's really the true identification of, like, not a blog boy, but just somebody who, like, you know, supports a team but isn't Homer about it.
Yeah, like, they know their team's weaknesses. It's like, oh, Boston, they're all hurt. Forget it. Yep. I don't think they're going to win. Exactly. And then Milwaukee is like, oh, well, they're kind of undisciplined, and they're just all over the place. So I don't think they're going to win against a structured Boston team. So
understatement of the year, I think, all over the place.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, this is James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin' of B-Ball Breakdown, and you are listening to Ray Ray is Fundamental.
All right, so we're going to pick our season awards. You know what's terrible about this, though, is that And I love TNT, but why are they picking the awards on June, late June, basically? Like, I kind of missed the days.
They did this last year.
They did this last year, too. I missed the days where they would pick them during the playoffs and then suddenly... Yeah, right now, exactly. And then the opposing team that was a candidate for such award will get so motivated that they're going to go ahead. Yeah, they're yes. going to try to go off on that team. Like, a perfect example was in... You probably weren't even born yet. 1995, when David Robinson won MVP.
Yep.
Against Hakeem Olajuwon, and Olajuwon just torched him.
Yep. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. I love that. I wish that they would make those adjustments. That would be really fun to watch. Can you imagine? Like, I know it's not going to happen this year, but it would be awesome to see Utah and Philly go at it for seven games.
Right.
I just wish that they were in the same conference in some way, shape, or form, and we could make that happen, because... I would love to see whoever gets Rookie of the Year, which I believe it's probably going to Ben Simmons, although everybody knows where I stand on this conversation. I'm pretty pro Donovan Mitchell at this point, but I would love to see a seven-game series with those two.
So you're kind of, you've been on the Mitchell hype forever. I've been seeing you, like, all year, basically. Like, oh, it's going to Mitchell. So what's up? Because I picked Ben Simmons myself, but we see the stat lines. You compare him. Obviously, Donovan, a better scorer. But then Ben Simmons all over the place with his stat line. So why Mitchell?
I've come around to the idea of co-rookie of the year. I know this can't happen just by people. It's happened before, but like it there's not first and second place votes like there used to be. You know, like the same sort of categories and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's statistically it's going to be very hard if that was actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. But. I just look, the storyline is a big portion of the Rookie of the Year, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what Utah was returning and what they were without in Rudy Gobert for a third of the season, I just, you know, I know 11-15 isn't great without Rudy Gobert, but people, if you actually look at the schedule they played, nobody, like, I don't think any NBA team, I don't care who they are, except for maybe the Warriors, would have gone 500 with that schedule. Right. They played like Golden State twice, Houston twice, Oklahoma City twice, San Antonio twice, like just every great team, the Cleveland twice. I mean, like teams that were way above 500. So to me, during that stretch, Mitchell just basically, to me, took the crown. And then obviously Simmons has been playing excellent basketball all season long. I think he went through some struggles without Embiid in the lineup early in the season. He overcame those. It's definitely something that I've looked at. I think, look, I think it's really, really like splitting hairs when you talk when you talk about just like what Mitchell brings or what Simmons brings. They're such different players that it's really hard to actually compare the two, which kind of sucks also. Mm-hmm. Because I think they both deserve their award, deserve the award in their own ways. I just feel like value wise and what Mitchell's done in a bigger, like a better conference overall. I just think it's something that, you know, I just haven't seen before. And the way he, like with Simmons, he's an offensive threat by passing or by, you know, playmaking, et cetera. Yes, his field goal percentage is quite high because he dunks and makes layups and things like that, but he doesn't shoot. And I know that shooting is a huge portion of the NBA, and I know that a lot of people have, you know, made it seem like Donovan Mitchell is just a shooter, but it's, you know, I think there's just an – it's so hard. I'm like, arguing with myself. I don't even know what to do. But there is just this aspect of being a number one option – and teams knowing that night in and night out and still being able to put up what Donovan did.
For sure.
And that, to me, is the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. Is just that teams know that you're the number one option. They're game planning for you night in and night out, and yet you still go out and you hammer them in whatever way that you can, whether that's passing, on-ball defense. I mean, obviously, Mitchell's not the defender Simmons is, because Simmons is also blessed with being 6'10", which I also think is kind of another discussion to be had too, is like, okay, pound for pound, who's the rookie of the year? It's Mitchell. But like, you know, there's, you know, I just think that there's so many different ways that you could go with this. To me, like I said, co-rookie of the year is the only way you could actually deservingly give this award. But for me, the Simmons not actually being a rookie conversation.
I was going to get to that too, because I know they had that little disqualifier right there. Like, hey, well, he's actually the second year in the league, which...
Yeah, and it's no detriment to Simmons. Like, I'm not trying to, like, say that he shouldn't be considered. I think that, for me, that's the tipping point. Like, that's the difference maker to me. I think they've both done incredible things on playoff roster or playoff teams, and without them, I don't think either team is in the postseason. So I think they've both done incredible things. It's just like one is actually a true rookie and one, to no benefit of his own, like it's not his fault, but one had a year with an NBA roster, had time to spend on the playbook with the coaching staff, with the training staff. And then on top of it, there is a little bit of like, he had 3 months, like he could have come back last year if he really wanted to, I think.
Yeah.
But he opted not to because they were tanking and there was no point, and just save him for next year kind of thing. So that whole thing just rubs me a little bit the wrong way.
Well, this isn't anything new, and there wasn't much noise about it about 7 years ago.
Yep.
But Blake Griffin was also a second-year rookie, and he beat out Sean Wall. But there wasn't much noise about it back then. Maybe because we're not as angry before.
Yeah, and I think it was more clear-cut. I think it was more clear-cut. At that moment in time, I think it was just so evident and clear what Blake was doing was just so much better. And in this situation, it's like, okay, what? How many wins difference were they to? Like 2 wins difference for the season or something like that?
But does that matter? Because back then there was also an argument between Kevin Durant and Al Horford. Durant was not going anywhere to Seattle Supersonics. They only had won 20 games, I think, at that point. And Al Horford with the Hawks were going to make the playoffs. So.
Yep.
That was and Durant won the award.
Yeah, Durant won the award. I think, man, it's just it's what you value, right? I mean, it's just everybody has their own criteria. And for me, like winning is a big portion of it. Getting to the postseason is a big portion. And then I try to disregard the stats as much as I can, because I feel like when you look at stats, you get into this like bubble of, okay, well, now I have to...
Yeah, go deep into it, right?
Like I have to go dig deep and, like, why is he getting this many? Okay, well, maybe his teammates, you know, he's 6'10". Okay, well, that's part of it. Like, okay, now, you know, there's just so many different things to it. And then now, like, with Russell Westbrook doing a triple-double for two seasons in a row, like, people have this, like, just this love for statistics, and I'm just not there. I know that sounds really close-minded, but for me, it's just tough to... It's tough to swallow just, you know, looking at box scores and saying, yeah, this player is better than that player. And I know that's not the case here. Like, Ben Simmons is an incredible player. I've been on him for years. I saw him at Hoop Summit when he was in high school, and he dominated everybody. He was the best player. He was going to be the best player. Everybody knew he was going to be the consensus number one pick. There was a lot of question marks, you know, right before draft time came up that Ingram should have been number one. I was completely on the opposite side of that. Simmons should have been number one, no doubt about it. Like, it wasn't even a question for me. And, you know, now I'm defending the guy in Donovan Mitchell just because I just feel like he just shows it to me more, just competitively. Like, there's just this killer instinct that he has that I didn't see Simmons out. Everybody can argue and say how they want to do it, but yeah, like I said, I could go on and on.
I know, and I have another example too. One more before we move on to the next award. But Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury. Iverson was he won Rookie of the Year, but they only won 20 games, I believe. And Marbury's team made the playoffs. Another example.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm not sure if wins actually are a big of a part compared to MVP, because obviously MVP, like, you need everything in there. But Rookie of the Year, not so much when it comes to wins, maybe?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. I mean, it's just... Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Now you're getting... Yeah. This could go on and on. Like I said, I just think the only way you can really deliver this award is Co. I don't even think people should vote on it. I really think it should just be like, okay, guys, we recognize that both you guys did stuff that no other rookies have ever done for a very long time. Let's just hand it to both of you guys, and then let's steam this rivalry up, because I think that would really, really, really stir the pot.
Well, I'm pretty sure we're going to still argue about this 5 years from now when no one remembers who won the awards in 2018, right?
So. Yeah, that's the other point of this whole thing. Like, Rookie of the Year means, like, if these guys both go on to have amazing careers, Rookie of the Year means nothing.
Well, heck, Michael Carter-Williams isn't exactly having a great career right now, and he won Rookie of the Year. So.
Yeah, that's true. But if you have great careers, nobody like, this Melo LeBron discussion hasn't been brought up since, you know, this whole thing has been brought. Like, it's only in these scenarios that it's brought up. Like,
yeah.
I don't sit there and look at Melo and LeBron and say, like, oh, well, you know, Melo should have won Rookie of the Year or whatever. That's far beyond, you know, LeBron is clearly the better player, we know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and another thing, David Robinson wasn't exactly, he was drafted in 87, won the award in 1990. So, but he did serve two years in the Air Force before going to the NBA.
That's true. Well, that's a little different.
Yeah. And Arvydas Sabonis was second in Rookie of the Year in 95, 96, I believe. But he was in...
He was playing ball overseas for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Like a decade before going to the NBA. The other awards, they seem pretty clear-cut to me, right? Like, Defensive Player of the Year. I have Rudy Gobert winning, and that seems like he's pretty much the guy, right?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I think that's pretty clear and evident, especially when he was out and when he was in, like, the number there, and then also just looking at him, it's just a totally changed team. And I think that's really, really clear as a player of the year. Like, what team truly changes their identity when the player comes in and out of a lineup? And I think he's the definition of that this year, no doubt about it.
Should he get penalized, though, for only playing 55 games this year?
55 games is enough. Look, I think half the season is where you cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything less than half the season, then you really have to start questioning, like, okay,
Joel Embiid,
this
right.
is a little much, but, you know,
yeah.
Joel Embiid, I think that's, yeah, what was that, 30 games?
31 games.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He didn't play very many. Yeah, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
It's just not enough.
Yeah, and I believe Patrick, even when Rookie of the Year, he only played 50 games, so, okay.
Yeah, that's fine. As long as it's over 41, I think it's fair.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anyone else for Sixth Man of the Year besides Lou Williams? Because obviously Lou had a career year. My gosh,
career year, best year. I mean, like, honestly, the Clippers. Shout out to the Clippers, man. Mm-hmm. Doc Rivers, heck of a coaching job. Best coaching job in his career, in my opinion. Better than the time that he won, you know, the championship with the Celtics, right. Honestly. I mean, like, based on the roster and what happened, it's pretty phenomenal that they finished, you know, what was it, ninth in the West? I think it's ninth. But, yeah, I mean, just barely out of the playoffs. We're right there till the very end. Pretty surprising, and I think that's, you know, I think Lou Williams is a huge part of that.
Yeah. I don't really see anyone else besides maybe Eric Gordon, maybe, but...
Eric Gordon definitely could be in that conversation. He won it last year. I think you just let him have it last year. Lou Williams clearly was, yeah, he was on another level this year.
Yeah. And most improved player, Victor Oladipo? Anyone else?
Depot, no doubt about it. Not even close.
I am so happy for him, though, because, like...
It's so great.
Yeah, because I don't think anyone saw this this kind of guy this year, because he was picked number two by Orlando, but we didn't really see any indication that he was going to be this guy, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I remember speaking to CJ McCollum right after he got drafted, mm-hmm. and I asked him, who's the best player in your draft class? And he said, well, behind me, it'd be Victor Oladipo, no doubt. Uh-huh. And I've thought about that ever since. And, like, when I was watching him play, I'm like, this is really the guy you said would be, like, are you kidding? Like, at times it was just, you know, baffling. And then he gets to Indiana, and you're like, oh, wow, what is going on? Is this, like, and then you start counting the games, and you're starting to think to yourself, okay, so when is this actually, like, legit? When can I think, like, this isn't just some anomaly, you know what I mean? Like, oh, okay, five-game stretch. Oh, here comes, you know, Depot sanity or whatever you want to call it. Okay, now it's past this 5 games. Now it's 10 games. Now it's 20 games. Now it's 30. And then, okay, wow, he's an all-star. Okay, well, and then today I think really sealed the deal, even though the awards have already been voted for and everything else. Today really sealed the deal for me. Like, this kid, yeah, he's going to be really, really good in this league for a long time. Like, he took it upon himself to dominate the Cavs today. And I think, yeah, that's as impressive of a performance as you can have on the road against Cleveland and the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm. And guess who won Rookie of the Year that season? Michael Carter Williams. Woo!
What a joke. Holy cow.
By the way, Giannis is in that class, so it's not like that class was a bust, but, you know.
No. Yeah, they had a few good players in there, but boy, mm-hmm. there were some rough picks in that draft, as I can recall.
Yeah. Shout out to the 2013 NBA draft, and hopefully you guys that are stuck in a D-League or not having a great career right now, hopefully it can get better for you guys. Anthony Bennett, especially. I was actually watching him play in the G-League recently, and I felt so bad.
He was
bad
bawling out.
I know, but I still felt bad for him because...
Oh yeah,
man, he's the number one pick.
He got the short end of the stick. He got short end of the stick in Cleveland. Yeah. I think that deteriorate. I think that really destroyed his confidence.
Yeah,
he was a beast. He was a beast in college. He was really good in college. I thought, actually, I was just talking to Cheick Diallo of mm-hmm. the Pelicans like right. 2 nights ago about mm-hmm. Anthony Bennett, and we're like talking back and forth, and he's like, "Man, that guy was really good in college." Like, and he had these spurts where he'd play really good games, and then he just like. For whatever reason, man, he loses every, like, it's like he doesn't want to be there or something. And yeah, I don't know. Hopefully he can get back in the league. He was balling out in the G League. Obviously, that's not the place you want to be balling out in. You really want to be balling out in the NBA, especially if you're a former number one overall pick. But maybe the team will take a 10-day contract on him and he'll prove him right.
Yeah, I think it kind of stood out to me that while he was playing pretty good in the G League, like, he should be dominating in that game that I watched at least. I was like, oh, man. I hope in the next few games that he did, that he would dominate in the G League.
He had some pretty good performances. I don't know if it was at the end of the season or the middle of the season. I can't remember when, but I remember seeing a couple, like, 30-point games, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was doing pretty well. I mean, I saw him definitely using some of the post moves that he had at UNLV, and... Like I said, hopefully he can turn things around. I think the thing with him is just the motor and, like, the will or want to do it. Like, he just never seemed to me, like, fully engaged, like, 100% in and bought into basketball full-time.
Right.
Hey, guys, it's Pamela Horton, Miss October 2012, and you're listening to Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast.
Coach of the Year has a lot of candidates, but who's your pick for that one? Because we can obviously go, Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers, you mentioned.
Boy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Eric Spoelstra. Yeah,
it's tough. I think just based on where I pick them, I think I have to go with McMillan. Mm-hmm. I literally picked them last, dead last in the NBA. I really thought their team was going to be awful. Nate McMillan was not highly thought of in my mind at all. I thought he was old school. I thought he was the next Byron Scott, kind of. that's where I thought he was headed. And, you know, I'm being honest because I'm going to be honest. I just think he's been, you know, I think him and Casey both deserve bouts for Coach of the Year, specifically because they changed the way fundamentally they coach. Mm-hmm. Like, they coached with the team in mind for the first time in a long time. I thought Casey stuck to his way too much, and both these guys weren't really willing to change to what the team that they had was.
Mm-hmm.
And this year you're seeing both of these guys like come out of their shell and like really show what they're capable of coaching wise and be able to like humbly understand that they needed to change in order to stay in the league. And I think that's, you know, definition of a true coach and like a really good coach is being able to change with the roster continuity and the changes within the roster. So I think, yeah, I give it to McMillan, but Casey is definitely a close second. Stevens certainly up there as well, just based on the injuries and what happened. Snyder's definitely got to be in that conversation. There's a lot of good candidates.
Yeah, I think it's rough.
It's tough.
Yeah. And you know this. You know McMillan because obviously you're a Portland guy, so you know what McMillan can do.
Oh,
and
yeah,
here's the thing.
I've seen McMillan coach.
Yeah,
he was never great.
Yeah, here's the thing with Nate McMillan. They were the slowest teams in Portland with Ben and Roy.
Oh, pace was awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was painful. I mean, that was the one thing that everybody critiqued, just how slow they played. Like, okay, Brandon Roy's going to take the ball up the court. There's going to be 10 seconds on the shot clock left when he gets up to half court. Like, that's just, you know, like, it was so slow. And you knew exactly what was going to happen. Okay, we're going to run a pick, and Brandon Roy's going to get a jumper, or we're going to pass to the guy who's running. Like, it really was that simple. It was a very simplified offense. There really wasn't much movement. And he ran that way a little bit in Indiana the past few years. And he just, like I said, I think, boy, what an incredible job to be able to do that. Like, I don't know, you, as a coach at that level, being able to realize that you were, you know, messing up or, you know, not doing the best thing for your team, that's gotta be a tough pill to swallow. So give him kudos for being able to do that.
Right. I'm looking at my season predictions right now, and I had Indiana winning 35 games. So I'm actually a little bit more generous than a lot of people out there.
Wow. Yeah. But I think I had like 20 to 30, like something like that. Like, I don't know. I was definitely not high on them.
I mean, I wasn't high on them either. It's not like I picked them to make the playoffs. I had about 9.
Yeah, 35 wins is, yeah, it's generous.
A little generous, yeah. But hey, they won 48. So, I mean,
yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, I picked Brad Stevens because I kind of picked him like pretty early because you win 16 straight games with a roster that's only bringing back 4 players and you got them all together just like that. Like,
yeah, that's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah,
no, it's insane. That no, I wouldn't. I don't question that pick one bit. Like, I just think that Stevens has done a phenomenal job. Like, oh my gosh, I thought this year it was just like a gravy year. It was like, okay, like the Celtics just need to make the playoffs. They'll be an 8 seed. You know, they'll squeeze their way in, even with Hayward, because I just thought it would take like 40 to 50 games for them to acclimate to playing with each other.
Yeah.
And boy, Jason Tatum stepped up big time. Jaylen Brown just, man, he's an excellent shooter, becoming an excellent shooter. Al Horford's been just a rock there. I think that's probably the biggest. He's the most underrated player in the league still. Like, people don't really understand how meaningful he is to that team. But
yeah,
if they didn't have Al Horford on that team, I don't know how many games they win, but I definitely feel like it's a lot less than what they did this year. And I think, yeah, like I said, I mean, just returning, like you said, 4 guys, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, drafting Jason Tatum and just throwing him into the fire and being like, yo, here you go. Play 30 minutes a night. Score a bunch of points.
Yeah, and
and make sure. Go ahead.
And the funny thing is that of the 4 guys, it's like, who's the longest tenured Celtic there? Marcus Smart? Like, 2 years?
Yeah.
That's it. Like,
and he's been injured for how many games this year?
Yeah. These are not guys who've been on the team for a long time. Just 2 years?
No. Rozier, we're talking 2 or 3 years.
Yep. Rozier, 1 year. Jaylen Brown, 1 year. Al Horford, 1 year. Actually, no, just 2 years, actually. So, like, they've only been there for a very short time. And for them to come together, winning 16 straight in the month of November, that's incredible to me. So.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Wouldn't question it at all.
Yeah. MVP, obviously, I'm James Harden, right?
There's no question about that. Yeah, it's got to be James Harden. I don't really get this whole LeBron thing at the last minute. Like,
well, recency bias, look, right?
I just, gosh, man, recency bias is totally here. I didn't understand it. It's like, okay, look, James Harden doesn't win enough games when Steph Curry wins the award 2 years ago. And then he comes back, he wins more games than Russell Westbrook. And then he still doesn't win the award because Westbrook has triple doubles. And then this year he comes back and he plays phenomenally, and like everybody's touting him as the MVP. And it seems like this has happened every single time for James Harden, by the way. this has happened the same time for James Harden every single night. It's like January, December, people are like, "Oh, Harden's the MVP. Just give it to him now." Blah 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 blah. And then like 3 months down the road, this whole recency bias thing creeps up, and you're talking about Westbrook. And talk about Steph Curry, and now it's LeBron James. And I'm just like, you just stop finding reasons to give it to somebody else. Like, please remember what James Harden did in the month of December, in the month of October, in the month of November. Like, he destroyed teams. And he did it even at the end of the season. It just look, they already clinched the one seed. They weren't going to be playing him 45 minutes a night.
Right.
I just think it's... it's ludicrous. I think he's well deserved at least two of these MVPs, and he's gotten zero. So, out of the three.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, Westbrook wasn't really talked about until possibly the last week because they suddenly realized,
triple doubles.
Oh my God, it's coming! Like, and it seems so low key this year because it already happened before the triple double season. So the second, not so much publicized, but people are saying, well, what about Westbrook? Here's the way I look at it, though, with Westbrook. He's got Carmelo and Paul George on his team now, and he's only won one more game than last season. So why should he win again, right?
I have no idea. Then just give me a reason. Like, it just makes sense to me. He hasn't changed the way he plays at all. He still becomes this, like, erratic animal in games. And I'm not trying to be like really rude. I like the way he plays it sometimes. It's infectious. I can get that. Uh-huh. But like, in order for him to win games, he still has to be Russell Westbrook of old. Like, he can't change his, like, him changing his game doesn't help this team for whatever reason. And I feel it's either Westbrook or their coaching, like one of the two. Like, those are the only two things that have stayed the same in Oklahoma City for the past couple of seasons. So it's like, one of these isn't working or isn't fully there. And yeah, they won game one against Utah. Congratulations. Like, you know, home court, you have three great players on your team. Four great players, and Adams, because I think I think he's really undervalued. But, you know, this whole, like, woe is me thing that I feel like people have started to have the narrative of, like, Melo isn't the same guy and Paul George isn't as good as we thought he was, and things like that. It's like,
he's played phenomenally this season. Stop. He was really good this season.
Let's pump the brakes here. Let's be real. Okay, Paul George is 20. Like, his shooting is off. Like, his form needs to change. Whatever the case may be. There's been a bunch of these, like, weird storylines that people have tried to come up with. It's like, no. You know, it's either Westbrook or it's coaching, and that's what I've brought it down to. I'm not trying to rag on Westbrook, but if he really, like... if he really was going to be in the MVP conversation for me, I would have been, if they won just one more game or two more games than last season, if he had changed his game fundamentally to make it really work, like make it look better. They haven't won, like, emphatic. They don't have many emphatic wins this season, even as much as they did last year, where he was kind of, you know, putting the team on his back, hitting big-time jumpers, big-time shots, things of that nature. I haven't seen that Russell Westbrook, and I also haven't seen the unselfish Russell Westbrook. And yes, he gets assists all the time because he drives into the lane and creates a lot of problems for offense or for defenses, but I just think there's more that he could do and he doesn't do it. And he, it almost is like he refuses to do it, or like I said, the coaching is the problem, and that's how they're coaching him to play.
Hey, man, like, sometimes you just can't get rid of those habits. It's like, okay, I'm going to keep the ball, I'm going to dribble for 20 seconds or whatever, and create havoc, and then pass the ball, right? Like, that's just how he is.
Yep.
Like, we see Toronto try to adjust to that with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, because they've been ISO heavy for the last few years, and then here they are, suddenly they're picking space all of a sudden. So, that's
and it's Casey.
Adjustment. Yeah. It's hard.
It is a hard adjustment. Yeah. It takes time. It takes, like I said, humility to be able to do it. Just like Nate McMillan, I was talking about him, how he had to like look himself in the mirror and say, okay, what do we need to change? How do I need to change to be, you know, to make this team better?
Right.
I don't think Russell is in that mindset. Like, I think his comment the other day about the triple doubles, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like, if it was that easy to get a triple-double, then everybody would do it or whatever. It's like, okay, that's not – to me, that answer isn't really a good answer. I think that's kind of a snobby, kind of cocky, arrogant answer to a question that is legitimate in some ways. You can definitely tell that he's trying to get those at times, especially in the game that he needed the 16 rebounds. So – I don't know. I just think a lot of the time we brush over that a little bit. I actually think that, I think there's a really big discussion about how good Westbrook actually is with a team. Because I don't know if he'd even be top 10 for me. Just the way he plays, I don't think it is conducive to winning a bunch of basketball games and making your teammates better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he tried early. And we saw it was a pretty quiet Russell Westbrook where
it was bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. It so they figured like, okay, go back to who
that's
you are.
That's painful.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
that's what's painful. Yeah, you're right. Go back to who you are. We'll still win the same amount of games we won last year, and that's what happened.
Well,
but I just wish they would have been able to figure it out. Like, it just didn't seem like, you know, and maybe it's coaching. Like I said, that's the other kind of common denominator here. Maybe the coaching staff really didn't put anything into play other than, hey, Westbrook, let's try and move the ball around more. You know, like, if you're not creating plays and really, really honing in on what needs to be done, players are going to be left out in the dark. And I think what's been so great in Houston with the adjustment with Chris Paul and James Harden were working together, like, right as the trade hit. Mm-hmm. They worked together every single day in the offseason until the season started. Every day. Mm-hmm. Same trainer, worked pick and rolls, worked how to implement a mini offense, watched a bunch of Phoenix tape, watched a bunch of D'Antoni's system, watched a bunch of Houston last year. How do we figure this out? Like, there was a lot more buy-in. And then, okay, this year, I think the problem is obviously they brought these guys in pretty late in the game, which was certainly not helpful. And then after that, you know, you look at the situation and what they could have done differently. I just don't think there's a willingness there from all parties to be able to change fundamentally.
Well, they're still the playoffs. What if they make the Western Conference Finals, right?
Yeah, so anything can happen. They could make this a great season.
Yeah, yeah. And is it a complete failure? They were the fourth seed, even if they only won 48 games, right?
They're
still a top four team.
Yeah. Top four team. I mean, if you would have told me that the Blazers would be ahead of the Thunder, I probably would have laughed.
That's very true, too. Yeah. All right, so, man, that was fantastic NBA and Big 3 talk. So, Oliver, go ahead and publicize your social media, all your writings, all your work. Go ahead.
Yeah, just follow me at OmaroniNBA, and you'll find all my work there. I've got a ton of stuff coming this week and next week from actually, we talked about Ben Simmons. The first time I saw him was at Hoop Summit. I've got some, you know, features coming on some of the Hoop Summit guys. So, really, really fun event that we have actually here in Portland, which is awesome because there's not many, you know, big time events like that. And, it's always fun to watch like the best players before they're, you know, the Ben Simmons and the Kevin Durant and people like that. So stuff from there should be coming. A bunch of other NBA stuff, should be coming as well. So yeah, like I said, I appreciate the time and follow me at OmaroniNBA if you have a chance.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe you'll see the next Ben Simmons, next Kevin Durant, next Shaq, maybe. I don't know, but
I don't know. Boy, that's interesting.
Right? Yeah, so thanks again, and we shall do this again soon.
Awesome, thanks again. Game over, yeah!
hashtag blame Ray Ray.